Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Millions are without power as Florida begins to assess the aftermath of Hurricane Ian.
Some of the utility executives in Florida, Power and Light, were already saying that this isn't going to be a repair challenge, it's going to be a rebuilding challenge. And in some of these areas, the infrastructure for the electric grid no longer exists, frankly. It's that damaged.
More on the storm damage and how residents are coping. Plus, stocks fall on a fading bond rally. And what's in a name? For some people, it's question marks and hashtags. It's Thursday, September 29th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. NATO is formally blaming sabotage for a series of leaks in the Nord Stream pipelines that serve as a key conduit for natural gas supplies between Russia and Europe, and says it would defend and protect against such attacks on critical infrastructure. In a statement today, the North Atlantic Council didn't provide details or evidence and noted that the damage occurred in international waters. But the statement marks an escalation of tensions between Russia and the West. During a meeting late Wednesday, NATO member countries said Russia was likely responsible for the leaks, but most have not wanted to publicly state that without more evidence, according to several senior European diplomats. Russia has denied involvement in damage to the pipelines. In a bipartisan vote, the Senate has approved a stopgap bill to keep the government funded through mid-December. The measure had been held up by a contentious proposal from Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia that would have sped up the federal permitting process for major energy projects. That proposal was dropped earlier this week. The House now has until Friday night to approve the legislation before the current fiscal year expires. House Democrats said they didn't anticipate any issues in approving it. The Food and Drug Administration has approved a new drug for the fatal degenerative disease ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Amylyx Pharmaceuticals drug is the first for the disease that the FDA has approved in 5 years. The ALS community advocated for the drug, which they say has a significant impact on progression of the disease and survival. But some FDA staff and neuroscience experts have questioned its effectiveness and whether testing demonstrated that it truly works. U.S. stocks lost ground today as yesterday's bond rally turned into a sell-off. The Dow fell more than 450 points, or 1.5%. The Nasdaq lost 2.8%, and the S&P 500 fell 2.1%. Our markets reporter, Hannah Miao, has more on the turbulence.
This week, volatility in the bond market has really impacted stocks. The benchmark 10-year Treasury yield was on the rise again, and that makes stocks look less attractive to investors relatively. Also, we got some economic data that showed the labor market is still pretty resilient. And what that means is the Federal Reserve has more room to go when it raises interest rates. And investors are worried that high interest rates could send the economy into a recession. And that's been really front of mind for investors all year.
Mortgage rates have risen to their highest levels in more than 15 years. According to data from Freddie Mac, the average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage climbed to 6.7% this week. In comparison, a year ago, rates were just a little over 3%. The surge in mortgage rates follows a series of interest rate hikes from the Federal Reserve, which is trying to cool the highest inflation in decades. And weekly jobless claims have been trending downward in recent weeks and have now hit their lowest level since the spring. The Labor Department says initial jobless claims fell to a seasonally adjusted 193,000 last week, from a revised 209,000 the previous week. That's below the pre-pandemic average. The latest data indicates that the labor market is still tight. Coming up, assessments of the damage wrought by Hurricane Ian begin in Florida as the storm moves out into the Atlantic. More on what comes next after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
In Florida, residents are dealing with catastrophic damage wrought by Hurricane Ian. Making landfall as a Category 4 storm, it was one of the most powerful on record to hit the country, bringing heavy winds, storm surges as high as 18 feet, and extensive flooding, knocking out power to millions of customers. Officials say it will take years to rebuild. Here's Governor Ron DeSantis.
There's going to be a lot more assessing that goes on in the days ahead, but I think we've never seen a flood event like this. We've never seen storm surge of this magnitude, and it hit an area where there's a lot of people in a lot of those low-lying areas, and it's going to end up doing extensive damage to a lot of people's homes.
Joining me now with more on what's happening in Florida is Wall Street Journal U.S. News editor Miguel Bustillo. Hi, Miguel. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Miguel, you have been coordinating our coverage of Hurricane Ian, and we have colleagues on the ground there. Can you give us a broad overview on where the most extensive damage is now and what we are seeing and hearing?
Well, the storm wound up making landfall south of Tampa around the Fort Myers area. And we have been trying to assess the state of the damage there. But needless to say, it's pretty significant when you have a Category 4 hurricane with maximum sustained winds of 150 miles an hour. Hitting any part of the United States is going to be significant. And this is an area, while not as populous as Tampa, still a pretty populated area. So unfortunately, what we are finding as we talk to people and get a sense ourselves of what happened, that this area took a very hard hit. There are a lot of damaged homes and other structures, and it looks like there's going to be a long rebuilding process ahead for these communities in this part of Western Florida.
And we know a broad swath of Florida was under evacuation orders ahead of the storm, but many people did choose to stay, and we have been hearing from some of them today, right?
Yes. As we get down to places like Fort Myers Beach and begin talking to people, we are hearing stories. Our reporter Elizabeth Findell, for example, heard a pretty harrowing tale from a few hotel workers who said they were on the second floor of this hotel when they saw an orange house that had normally been across the street floating in their direction. And they noticed that there were three people and two dogs trying to escape through a window of this home. And as the house floated past another house, they tried to yell to the people to try to swim, to make it to this other house. But the surf was very strong, and it was all but impossible. And as one of them told us, there was nothing we could do. So they were kind of watching helplessly as this happened. And minutes later, they noticed that one of the people that they had seen was clinging to a palm tree, and unfortunately feared the worst for what had happened to these people. And these are the kind of things that unfortunately we are learning about and hearing about. It is often the case that not everyone evacuates. And sometimes with storms like this, where the path was uncertain before it made landfall, sometimes people feel that they're okay, that they're not at the worst place, quote unquote. And by the time they realize that perhaps they are, it is too late to evacuate. So the advice in those cases is to try to go to a shelter or to shelter in place. And it appears that there may be people who didn't evacuate who, in hindsight, probably should have and are going to be in difficult situations, and some of them may not have made it.
And as we're hearing about these dangerous conditions still across the state right now, what can you tell us about the ability of rescue and utility workers to get in there and help people who are in need? What are the major challenges right now, some 24 hours after the storm has made landfall?
There were more than 2 million people without power in the state of Florida. So from a power standpoint, the utility companies were still trying to reach many of the areas that where power had been lost. And some of the utility executives from Florida Power and Light were already saying that this isn't going to be a repair challenge. It's going to be a rebuilding challenge. And in some of these areas, the infrastructure for the electric grid no longer exists, frankly. It's that damaged. And so they are going to have to completely rebuild. And thus, part of the assessment that power companies have to make is how much power can they turn on and when versus how many people are going to be without power for an extended amount of time. And similarly, there's just similar calculations being made all around about the extent of the damage, what the recovery is going to be, and what rescues are. We have, as of this morning, we have search and rescue teams that are going out there and trying to find people in some of the most damaged areas. But that's a dangerous thing to do, and it is often something that search and rescue teams have to wait before they can go into some of these areas because of down power lines, other risks that may exist.
And as we continue to get these initial assessments in Florida, we know that Ian has now weakened into a tropical storm. Forecasters are saying it could pick up strength and potentially make landfall in South Carolina tomorrow. Miguel, what are the latest expectations there?
Yeah, so the storm has now completely crossed the state of Florida, going from the western shore all the way across into the east coast of Florida. And it is going up the coast and is going to threaten South Carolina now and the Charleston area. It's expected to do that Friday morning. It is a lot less powerful having crossed the state of Florida than it was initially, but it is still a fairly strong storm, and it is expected to be a Category 1 hurricane when it strikes that area of Charleston, South Carolina. So it's something that we at the Journal are going to continue to monitor, and it continues to be a threat now to Atlantic coastal communities.
Wall Street Journal U.S. News Editor Miguel Bustillo. Miguel, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And finally, what do Alexander Skarsgård, Charli D'Amelio, and Taye Leone have in common? They all have names with special characters, a little ring over the A, an apostrophe, an accent. And when those names get put into computers, they regularly come back as invalid, screwing up everything from coffee orders to airplane tickets. Our design reporter Katie Dayton explains why names with hyphens, umlauts, and other symbols are still making life hard in the internet age.
If every system in the world was up to date, then there would be absolutely no reason for this to happen. The problem is lots of companies and organizations use different outdated systems, which means that say you were putting in an umlauted letter into a form, that system is passing that letter to an old system which doesn't have the ability to encode that letter. What will happen is it will spit out this weird jumble of letters, and I'm sure everyone that has what companies refer to as a special character in their name will have seen is you get your name spelt back to you with like a question mark and percentage sign in it.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.